Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.
These policies are designed to work. They're designed to get investment, and there's just more in there than anyone could previously have dreamed about. It's going to be a really exciting couple of years as folks take advantage of it.
Walking the floor at RE Plus in Anaheim, overhearing conversations, and having many of my own with clean energy leaders, it's clear the Inflation Reduction Act has changed the entire trajectory for an industry that a couple of months ago seemed rather depressed over policy inaction. In June, President Joe Biden paused for 2 years any new tariffs on solar modules imported from Southeast Asia, and the Inflation Reduction Act provided the incentives to resurrect American solar manufacturing. Now the clock is ticking for the U.S. to ramp up domestic manufacturing capacity before additional tariffs could be levied in response to the Oxen Solar petition. Is that enough time, and does the IRA go far enough? I'm John Engle, Content Director for Renewable Energy World. What you're about to hear is a live taping of Factor This from the floor at RE+. I was joined by Lightsource BP America's CEO Kevin Smith, Qcells Director of Public Affairs Scott Moskowitz, and Cypress Creek Renewables VP of Engineering Luke O'Dea to get to the bottom of those questions and see what progress has already been made. That's all next on Factor This from Renewable Energy World. Factor This is brought to you by Nextracker. The Inflation Reduction Act is a game changer for American solar manufacturing. But even before the landmark legislation passed, Nextracker was betting big on Made in America, ramping up 10 gigawatts of domestic manufacturing capacity while others waited out the pandemic, supply chain constraints, and tariff risks. With new factories in Corpus Christi, Phoenix, and Pittsburgh, Nextracker brought its world-leading tracking equipment to you, producing trackers from lower carbon steel made right here in the USA. Nextracker, the industry's most advanced smart solar tracking systems. Check our show notes to learn more.
So today we are talking about the two-year timeline, how to meet U.S. demand with U.S.-made solar modules. And it obviously comes at an important time post-Inflation Reduction Act. So let's set the stage here a little bit. Earlier this year, the solar industry obviously came to a screeching halt when the Commerce Department initiated that investigation of the Oxen Solar tariff petition, looking at modules imported from Southeast Asia that were purportedly skirting trade duties against China. And with 80% of our supply coming from Southeast Asia, that was obviously not a fun experience for our developers here in the U.S. Since then, a lot has changed. We got a two-year moratorium from President Biden on new tariffs against modules imported from Southeast Asia after a aggressive and persistent push from our developers and our manufacturers and the trade groups that support our industry. And then the 11th hour Inflation Reduction Act incentives that clearly came at an appropriate and needed time to incentivize domestic manufacturing here in the U.S. So that's what's at play here. And to really start off this conversation, I want to talk about the IRA. And someone very close to that was Scott. And with Qcells being so intertwined with Senator John Ossoff, the author of the Solar Energy Manufacturing for America Act, SEMA Act, you guys are obviously have your presence with the factory in Georgia. Would love to hear from you, Scott, about your reaction when that legislation that, you know, the 700 pages came seemingly out of nowhere, included SEMA, and really changed the landscape for what we're talking about.
Yeah, I was in my car driving to pick my daughter up from daycare when I got a call that Senator Manchin and Senator Schumer had reached an agreement on this landmark bill that was then called the Inflation Reduction Act. And it's, you know, I think from moving forward, we will always think of our industry and a history of two eras before and after the Inflation Reduction Act passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, you speak to some really complex and longstanding supply chain and trade issues that our industry's undergone. Without this bill passing, we would have had a very difficult time solving any of those issues in the long term. I think we have 2 years in front of us where, you know, those issues still remain. They aren't going to get solved overnight. But now we have some policy in place that's really going to put in – that creates – the possibility to solve these issues and really invest in U.S. manufacturing, really diversify the global landscape and accelerate the energy transition. So we're really excited about it passing.
We saw First Solar announce a $1 billion expansion just a few weeks ago. Toledo Solar this week announcing an expansion of their own. Qcells and Hanwha have said that, you know, they were ready to pull the trigger on a multi-billion-dollar supply chain investment pre-SEMA Act, pre-Inflation Reduction Act. Now we have those incentives.
Yep.
Care to break any news about site visits and evaluations for Qcells?
I won't break any news today, but we invested last year in REC Silicon. They've got a 6-plus gigawatt polysilicon plant in Washington State. We're hoping to bring that online by the end of next year. We're currently expanding our 1.7 gigawatt module factory in Dalton to a little over 3 gigawatts. And we are working on some multi-phase, multi-billion-dollar expansions across the full supply chain that are really going to be unlike anything I think we've seen in the U.S. in a long time. So we're working on that pretty hard.
Factory in Texas?
Well, we're looking at several states, including Georgia, where we've been really lucky to be the last couple of years.
We'll circle back to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Kevin Smith, as I said, CEO of Lightsource BP Americas, one of the largest developers worldwide of solar and significant presence here in the U.S. as well. You are the first repeat guest of the Factor This podcast. And the last time we talked to you, the entire landscape was different. The Oxen tariff petition was fairly fresh. Commerce's announcement of the investigation was new. And the industry was still shell-shocked by the impact that that was causing. Now, as we said, everything has changed. At the time, you talked about the political risk of the U.S. market and how it was challenging to assess how to make investments and how to plan for the long term in the absence of a clear industrial policy and a clear policy to support clean energy. How do you feel now?
Well, obviously, the Inflation Reduction Act is just kind of a fundamental change in where we were. I talked about some of the political risk that I've dealt with. You know, I mean, I've been in the energy industry literally decades in the U.S. and internationally. And, you know, we've always struggled with short-term programs, 2 years of this, a year of that on the renewable energy side. And this is really, as I said, kind of a fundamental sea change in policy. Shout out to the industry group, Solar Energy Industry Association did a fabulous job. We're very active. And so we had the ability to kind of help impact some of the policy issues. But, you know, now we've got a kind of a 10-year view. It puts us, you know, I mean, one of the things that renewable energy has struggled with is the fact that, you know, I'll say conventional energy, oil and gas, has similar tax credits all embedded in the tax codes for decades and decades and decades. Whereas renewable energy, we struggle with this 1 year, 2 year, 3 year renewals. Now we've got a 10-year landscape in front of us that allows the industry to really accelerate. You know, there's a huge amount of jobs in the industry, 250,000. We're looking at you know, pretty much an easy path to 1 million jobs by 2030.
2 years is not a lot of time. So this moratorium, the clock is ticking. We have this supply need, obviously, and I think all parties involved want to see a robust domestic manufacturing base for solar. You know, a year and a half from now, what do you think the supply looks like in the U.S., given the conversations you're having with partners at Lightsource BP?
Well, first of all, Commerce hasn't made their determination yet of whether they'll impose taxes. So we have this 2 year clock that's running for the deferral of tariffs. So which is, I think it goes to June 2024.
Yeah.
Commerce now has delayed their decision on additional tariffs to the end of the year, maybe January, I think. So we're holding our breath. Obviously, you know, from my view, 18 months, 2 years from now, there'll be significant impacts. There'll be significant announcements. You know, I think there'll be, you know, certainly an increase in U.S. manufacturers in the U.S. market, but it won't come close to providing what the U.S. capacity requirements are. We've done a lot of, we did a big, you know, 5 gigawatt deal with First Solar. That's helping us, you know, meet some of those requirements. We avoid the tariffs. We've got one of the main U.S. manufacturers under a, you know, kind of as a partner for us on our projects. But it's not a 2-year time frame. It's it's going to be 3 to 5 kind of before they're, you know, we can really look at a large portion of U.S. supply coming from U.S. manufacturers. But I'll let my, you know, colleagues here comment on that as well.
Yeah, sure. And I'd like to go to Luke here on that point. Cypress Creek and some other partners, AES Clean Energy, Clearway Energy Group, DE Shaw, all built that the consortium and the multi-billion-dollar commitment to procure U.S. manufactured modules. I think that was also in June, pre-Inflation Reduction Act. So that was helpful to see. Luke, what kind of assurances can that give to manufacturers like Qcells for solar, others, about their 10-year timelines and meeting your needs?
Hey, Factor This listeners, it's John Engel. I wanted to let you know that you can now watch every new episode of the Factor This podcast on YouTube. Just search Renewable Energy World and leave a rating and review while you're there. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that, you know, it was an interesting timing because it was pre-IRA. It was in the
2 weeks
back in the dark ages a couple months ago when we all thought the Build Back Better Act was not something that was going to come to fruition. And, you know, Cypress, along with other developers, had been looking at a challenging landscape where we have, you know, we're flirting with tariffs coming in and out. We're dealing with other supply chain challenges and shipping and the availability and things arriving on schedule. And really thought that we wanted to be a company that was that our supply chain was aligned with our company values, that we were ethically sourcing our product, and that that we could be a force for good in our communities where we're building projects and having local impacts by also supporting American manufacturing. And Cypress had kind of had this idea, and we ran across colleagues in the industry who were thinking the same way. So we joined forces and formed the U.S. Solar Buyers Consortium, and committed to 6 to 7 gigawatts per year of volume, starting as early as 2024 for domestic supply. And we thought, you know, hey, this is something that we as an industry can just do. We're just going to step up. You know, if the federal government's not going to play this role, we're going to step up and try to get the snowball rolling. Because once the snowball starts rolling, like the volumes will get bigger and like the cost will be competitive. And that's what needs to happen. So, you know, it's a really interesting time where we were like stepping up and just wanted to be one of the leaders in making this happen. And now we have the IRA in place. And, you know, hopefully this volume is something that lets a manufacturer or a couple of manufacturers have some orders they can take to the bank and really accelerate their plans. Because it does seem like there are a lot of suppliers out there who had a plan, who they put on ice as these bills was, you know, since last year when the bill was first around. And, you know, hopefully this is something that lets folks, you know, get their financing and really accelerate plans and start building these factories and getting that module volume flowing as soon as possible.
Yeah. And Qcells was very clear about that in the year before the Inflation Reduction Act, that we are ready to pull the trigger on a multi-billion-dollar commitment if and only if CEMA Act passes in one way or the other. So how long then, with those supply agreements, how long does it take a manufacturer to really make meaningful upgrades to its own supply chains and production quantities? Because we all want to see this happen as fast as possible, but these are infrastructure challenges too. Yeah. Scott?
Yeah, and I like Luke's point about getting the snowball rolling. You know, a lot of manufacturers, a lot of us announced that within the last year, saying that if CEMA passes, we will all make these big investments. And of course, the bill kind of toiled in obscurity for, you know, we'd all hope this would have passed it about this time last year. But here we are and folks are ready. Some of these investments can come online pretty quickly. You know, it takes 8, 9, 10 months to get a new module assembly facility online. It might take 2 years, a little longer to get ingot, wafer, and cell. But what I'm hopefully, again, this snowball rolling metaphor is that, you know, a couple of things are generally true in this industry. The last 2 years have kind of flipped some of these rules of thumb on their head, but typically installations and demand in this market grows faster than people expect, and prices usually fall faster than people expect. Again, the last 2 years has been a huge exception to that rule, but I'm hopeful that the same is true of domestic manufacturing investment, that, you know, right now we've got a number of companies that have announced intention to build. We know of, you know, 10 plus 20 gigawatts, close to 20 gigawatts that are probably going to come online within 2 to 3 years, but I'm hopeful it will be much more to that, more than that. And maybe there will be 40 to 50 within 4 to 5 years. These incentives are for 10 years. They step down after, like, in 2029, 2030. There's incentive to move quickly, and they are healthy and they will work. So there could be a lot of stuff coming. And yes, it's going to be, doesn't solve our problems overnight. We got 2 years ahead of us, I think, where a lot of these things have to get figured out and looked at. But it's a new world that we're living in. I could talk about that for a long time.
Well, and for a long time, we've got 13 minutes. So you can fill as much as you want. But
right.
You mentioned those other pieces of the value chain, too. It's not just modules that we're talking about that we really need to address. So I guess for anyone in the group, like, how do you view the other components that you were mentioning, PolySupply and Wafer? And we've seen some announcements over the last week, but there still is a significant gap there. How do we address those challenges?
I'll let you guys comment on this, because there's obviously more trade issues that are ongoing than just this, you know, the circumvention case.
Absolutely.
That you mentioned. So it's an important thing for companies like theirs to figure out ensuring that product can come into the US. I'll let you talk about how you think about
it. I think that's going to be the more difficult task is, I mean, we're going to have assembly certainly in the US. There's going to be expansions in facilities. I think PolySupply into the US, that's going to be the big issue that we're looking at. You know, we've taken a bit of a different route. You know, we should, you know, mention obviously that First Solar doesn't depend on poly. So they've got a different technology.
Right.
And there's actually some other technologies out there as well that can advance that. So you're going to see some major players that are going to do assembly here. The poly supply, I think, is going to take a while. At the same time, as kind of Scott mentioned, I mean, we're going to go from 20 gigawatts to 40 gigawatts. So it's not like we're going to have a stable, you know, flat demand on the module supply side. It's going to be ever increasing as we carry on. So the supply is going to be chasing the demand in the U.S. market. So, you know, we're going to, you know, we're looking, obviously, you know, there's issues other than just tariff, you know, responsible, sustainable supply issues. We're looking at those issues very, very carefully as well to make sure we're buying responsibly. You know, one of the things I like about the Inflation Reduction Act is prevailing wages and apprenticeship programs. Mm-hmm. You know, it levels the field for everybody, and it provides those good paying jobs locally. It's going to cost a little bit more for the projects, but everybody's held to that standard. So I think that's going to be a really a nice selling point for solar into the communities as well. So poly supply, you know, is going to be the biggest challenge, I think, as we look forward.
Luke, any thoughts there?
Well, I'll two quick points. One, is I'm also interested in the other bill of materials items like the glass. I think as the module, as you have more module plants in the US, you'll start to see those other bill of materials items hopefully starting to spin up here in the US and the other parts of the supply chain that's not cell related,
right,
also being produced here and not needing to be imported. So like glass, it's a lot of glass that we need out there. And then, you know, on the jobs and I had really interesting conversations over the last couple of days of the show here with several module suppliers. And, you know, I'm learning more about what it takes to build modules and build cells and wafers and the level of skilled technical workers that are needed to fulfill these manufacturing plants, both, you know, module assembly, which is, you know, technical assembly, but also like building cells is, you know, we were told this week, you know, everyone on the production line is at least a bachelor in engineering level of training. So there's a large, you know, highly skilled, highly technical workforce that's going to be needed. And there's a lot of job creation that's going to come with all this manufacturing.
Factor This is brought to you by the energy industry's newest event, Grid Tech Connect Forum. This regional event is breaking the industry out of its silos, bringing together utilities and DER developers to tackle the multitude of challenges associated with interconnection. The inaugural regional event will be held on February 6th of 2023 in San Diego and will focus specifically on the issues facing the California market. Head over to gridtechconnect.com or click the link in our show notes to sign up for updates from the energy industry's groundbreaking new event, Grid Tech Connect Forum, from Clarion Energy. Now, back to the podcast.
Interested if all three of you can peel back the curtain a little bit too, and how you started reevaluating pipelines and production plans as in that near, you know, immediate aftermath of IRA. Aftermath sounds negative, so I'm not a different word, but following the IRA, it did come as a surprise to most of us. So I imagine there was a an all hands call or email that went out fairly soon after that. But walk me through that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got a big pipeline of projects across the U.S., you know, 100 plus projects, you know, kind of 20 gigawatts in 30 states. And we're now looking at each one of those, you know, where do they fall in with the ITC? Is PTC a better option? You know, we've got our you know, modelers are working kind of 18 hours a day, kind of trying to look at some of our projects. You know, how does it affect pricing? Should we be looking at different size projects? Should we be looking at interconnection? More interconnection applications into certain markets.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, on the interconnection side. So, I mean, it's a you know, changing the economics on a lot of projects, in most cases for the better. But it is, you know, that whole tax equity side is now going to be different, you know, some positives, some negatives. You know, yeah, you've got transferability issues in the IRA, but at the same time, now you've got tax credits for manufacturing, you've got tax credits for green hydrogen, you've got tax credits for storage. So the tax equity markets are, you know, they're looking at a bigger market for them, and we're still going to have challenges on the tax equity side. So transferability issues, those kinds of things. There's a lot of unknowns that we're still looking at under the IRA that are going to wait for Treasury guidance, right. You know, Treasury, Department of Energy, Department of Labor, you know, that are going to have to look and provide guidance on exactly how some of these are going to work. So, you know, we're running sensitivities on how we think it's going to all work out, but there's still a lot of unknowns that we're dealing with over the next few months.
Yeah, the domestic content adders to the investment tax credit exactly. are a good example of that, in which there's an obvious benefit that folks will be able to get. You get a 10% bonus if you source domestically, but it's not yet clear exactly what's going to qualify for that. I will note, though, you know, from once the bill passed, you know, most of us, there were U.S. senators that were not aware that deal was getting worked on. So everyone that the text came out that night, we were all looking, what made it in the bill? What are the implications of that? What are the specific languages of things that, you know, what survived in those negotiations that were happening behind closed doors for weeks? And I think one clear example to give about why this stuff is going to work is on the manufacturing side. So a couple of years ago, when the pandemic started, there were a bunch of pieces of legislation that started moving to keep the economy running, to start solving some of these supply chain issues that were clearly emerging. And U.S. solar manufacturers started looking at, in particular, what can we ask for that will help us grow? And the first thing that folks looked at was that domestic content adder to the investment tax credit. And we pretty quickly realized that, like, you know, that's a great policy. People know tax credits, but it's not the thing that's going to drive a bunch of new manufacturing investments, just because it's hard to figure out who gets those credits, how it's going to drive up and down the chain, like between a poly company and a module company, for example. So folks started working on what became the Solar Energy Manufacturing for America Act, which also got things like backsheets and trackers and inverters and a bunch of other stuff that made it into that. And an actual better name for that would be the Clean Energy Manufacturing for America Act, because it's also got storage and wind. But both of those things made it into the final bill.
Yeah.
The Solar Energy Manufacturing for America Act and the domestic content adders. So, you know, these policies are, at least SEMA for sure, are designed to work. They're designed to get investment, and there's just more in there than anyone could previously have dreamed about. So it's going to be a really exciting couple of years as folks take advantage of it.
Well, when the text dropped, that was my first thing. Command F, Control F, looking for the SEMA provisions. Yeah. That was what I was checking for. Luke, did you have a thought there?
Well, you know, as a developer with, you know, a pipeline, a large pipeline of a lot of projects in a lot of different places, yeah, it's been a big data problem of trying to, like, this is the best kind of problem to have, but where are all the energy communities? What are we thinking about PTC versus ITC? That question gets another level on it when you look at domestic content and where, you know, if let's say we're in a world where domestic manufacturing is not yet fully supplying the U.S. industry, so you have a limited supply of domestic modules, maybe some imported volume. Where as a developer and as a project owner, are we going to benefit the most from putting domestic modules? Is it, you know, a PTC region with super high yield by boosting a PTC, or is it going to be on ITC projects? So yeah, there, you know, the release of this bill text, and there's so many different programs and different provisions in here. They have mentioned energy communities, trying to map those out. Where do those zones overlay with development assets? Where we want to pursue new development has been exciting. And, you know, it's definitely causing us to really take a fresh look at every project in our pipeline, even ones that were maybe looking more challenged. So, you know, the good projects have got better, and maybe challenged projects that might not have been meeting an investment threshold now all of a sudden are looking more competitive and may get built. So that's Bill's doing what it's supposed to do there.
Well, and a couple of you guys mentioned the apprenticeship component and prevailing wage component. Anecdotally, that has come up in almost every conversation that I have had at RE Plus, is questions about how that'll be defined and how that'll work in terms of the full life cycle of a project, from developer to EPC, and coordinating some of those aspects throughout the project could prove difficult. You know, another piece that we need to wait and see on a little bit for clarification.
And we need to recognize that really the industry isn't done yet on, yeah, you know, this implementation process over the next, you know, could be 3, 4, 5 months, you know, before we get Treasury guidance and guidance out of labor and energy and others. So the industry groups, you know, Solar Energy Industry Association, we're very active in trying to help formulate policy. We invite everybody else to kind of join that process, because, you know, the government and the politicians have put in place a large framework, and there's a lot of general concepts in there, including things like prevailing wages. But the implementation is going to be really key, and this is a great bill. It can be an incredibly great bill, or it can be a modestly great bill based on the implementation issues. So government needs to be timely on that. And the industry itself, the solar industry, has got to push government, get active in their industry associations on how these things are going to be implemented. Prevailing wages, I've done a prevailing wage project before. It's very, you know, it's very complex. There's a lot of reporting and audit requirements. And depending on how those things are identified and what classifications of labor are utilized, can make a big difference on costs and implementation. So everybody still needs to kind of be, you know, at kind of full speed to make sure implementation goes smoothly and helps this bill become as great as it can be.
One fine point on the labor requirements that I think doesn't always get the most attention is that those also apply to operations, yeah, for the first, yeah, period of a project. And, you know, as a company that operates four or so gigawatts of projects and add more every day, that, you know, those are higher paying jobs that do impact the O&M line of your project, or, you know, impact operating costs, but also, you know, provide some stability in the communities where projects are built, where those ongoing jobs are, you know, are higher paying. And interesting aspect of the labor that, you know, isn't always top of mind for everybody, but certainly has an impact as well.
Absolutely. Kevin, Scott, Luke, thank you all for participating in this live recording of Factor This. I'm John Engel. Thank you all for listening and showing up today. Hope you enjoy the rest of RE Plus. Please check out Factor This wherever you get your podcasts, from Renewable Energy World. And thank you to Nico and the Suncast team for putting this together.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Factor This from Renewable Energy World. And thank you to Nextracker for sponsoring this episode. You can find a video recording of the live episode from RE Plus in the show notes and on our website at renewableenergyworld.com. Factor This is a production of Renewable Energy World and Clarion Energy. Join us every Monday as we break down solar's most important topics with industry leaders who actually move the needle. And please leave us a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, check out our new podcast, the Texas Power Podcast from Renewable Energy World, where host Doug Lewin guides listeners through the complicated world of Texas energy. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Factor This from Renewable Energy World. Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.